as each of the three colors are scribed on the scribing plotter.
They should be passing over the crater Dionysius, 18 degrees east, about now, continuing to thrust up into the sky, up into the space. We may hear them mention some more crater names. Theon Senior, Theon Senior A, Dionysius. This crater Schmidt's located.
Eagle Houston, you're still looking mighty fine.
Still looking good, continuing to thrust. 6 minutes, another minute.
Roger, good agreement in Delta V to go in both Ags and Pings. Roger.
The Ags and the Pings agree in the readings they're giving for guidance throughout this burn. This is, of course, critical. During all of this...
1 minute to go in the burn.
During this expending of great amounts of energy...
4,482 feet per second, horizontal velocity.
During this expending of great amounts of energy, they must be on an accurate trajectory. The guidance must be proper in order to utilize the energy properly into orbit. Buzz Aldrin there.
Okay, and open up the main shutoff.
All right, he says he's going to open up the main shutoff. That does not mean it's shutting down yet. Still about...
Pressure's holding good, cross speed off.
Pressure's holding good, cross speed off.
250 to go.
About another 15 seconds to go in the burn, at which point they should be into an orbit.
Come on, engine arm. 90, okay, off, 50, shut down.
Shut down. The ascent propulsion system engine has shut down.
We got 53373, 32.8 feet per second. 60,666.
That's very, very close.
Eagle, roger. We copy. It's great. Go.
And we got our residuals.
The residuals from Armstrong now, or?
Yeah.
It looked like the guidance system worked
properly. Eagle, Houston,
the
trim residuals.
Showing a Paraloon of 9.1 nautical miles, Apolloon 47.2 nautical miles on the pings. All three systems are go.
All three systems are go. That means 9.1 by 47.2 nautical mile orbit.
Showing about 37 feet per second, plus or minus a foot or so on each of the three systems.
That means that they are now well within an orbit which can effect a rendezvous with the command module.
Eagle Houston, trim looks good.
Over 15 kilometers
That's
would be
good.
Their low point in coming back down to the surface. That's Mike Collins.
Okay, that sounds a little on the high side.
That's Mike talking to Neil.
Okay, Houston, we show 47.3 by 9.5.
That's the onboard
Roger, 47.2
reading.
47.2 by 9.5.
Onboard reading, 9.5 nautical miles by
47.3. 46.6.
The low point in their orbit is now over 16 kilometers above the surface. Certainly within range of the command module rescue capability. And this is very, very close to the nominal liftoff trajectory expected. So, astronauts...
Houston, request abort stage reset, engine stop reset, mode control, that holding your chance.
That noise is coming from the command module transmission, I believe. Both craft are now up in orbit around the moon. We should lose the lunar module around the west limb in 35 minutes. The command module in 35 minutes. The limb should go around in 36 minutes. They're both in orbit. The lunar module, Eagle, in an elliptical orbit, dipping down as close as 16 kilometers above the surface, and going up, they're approaching 100 kilometers above the surface at its high point in this orbit achieved by the 7-minute burn of the
control. The describing plotters showing the velocity and height. Here we go again.
Let's proceed with T-52 astronomical.
T-52, another tracking exercise.
Roger, Houston. The Eagle is back in orbit, having left Tranquility Base and leaving behind the replica from our Apollo 11 patch, the Island Bridge.
Armstrong describing what was left
Roger,
behind.
Copy. The whole world is spotted.
Armstrong describing leaving behind on Tranquility Base the olive branch for all mankind. I thought that's what he said. We'll have to go back over that very, very carefully later. Transmissions, of course, becoming scratchy there now as both craft are moving some 4,000 kilometers per hour in lunar orbit. And then tracking is just a little bit more difficult here at this point. That comment there, that last voice you heard, was Mike Collins in the command module in Columbia.
Here at Mission Control, the scribing plotters have been replaced with the lunar orbit tracking chart showing Eagle behind Spider some 20 degrees in longitude.
Eagle behind Columbia.
Flight operations director Chris Kraft commented that he felt like some 500 million people around the world were helping push Eagle off the moon and back into orbit. We're continuing to monitor transmissions between the ground and Eagle and Columbia. Apollo Control standing by.
Chief of Flight Operations Christopher Kraft, well aware that millions and millions of people are listening and watching this event. As you heard Terry White report, Chris Kraft says he felt like 500 million people around the world were helping lift that spacecraft off the surface of the moon. This broadcast, of course, coming through the Voice of America. If you're listening to radio,
Columbia,
and also,
request,
you may be
poo and accept, and we'll give you a good old lamb vector, over.
Of course, you may be many listeners and viewers watching through live television, being seen around the world, also transmitted from here at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. There was, of course, no TV picture of the liftoff. The camera was not actuated. It is left on the surface, and it lost its power at the moment that the ascent stage lifted off. You're listening to this broadcast coming to you from Washington and Houston through the Voice of America. 31 minutes until the lunar module, I beg your pardon again, until the command module goes around behind the moon, 30 minutes and 32 minutes until the lunar module disappears around behind the moon, out of contact. We will expect the next burn, the concentric sequence initiation, the next firing of the onboard rocket systems on the lunar module at 18 hours 51 GMT, I believe. About 50 minutes from now.
And we'll be in a coasting phase, will we not, Rhett, in this lower orbit of some 17.6 kilometers by about 87 kilometers.
Well, until that next burn, yes.
Until the next burn, yes. We're over one of the most critical phases in a lunar landing flight, and that is the firing of that ascent engine. We have only, or had only, one engine there to fire. And it went off beautifully, the 7-minute burn putting it into a low orbit. We're now in what we call the...
Eagle Houston, you can go ahead and turn your updated link switch off.
The capsule communicator speaking to the lunar module.
Roger, it's off.
Yeah, Roger.
Now I'm in orbit, and we'll begin our orbital mechanics, the changing of orbits, the catching up with the command module Eagle, Michael Collins alone operating that ship. This program is originating in Washington.
The Voice of America has a limited supply of color photographs of the three Apollo 11 astronauts. If you would like one of these souvenir photos, write to The Voice of America, Washington, D.C., USA, Box 8108. Citizens of the United States are not eligible.
This is The Voice of America. We will return to our live coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
Jodrell Bank Observatory reports that the Soviet Union's unmanned Luna 15 spacecraft has apparently landed on the moon, but it's uncertain whether it made a soft landing or crashed. Sir Bernard Lovell, station director, reported that the spacecraft landed at a site near the Sea of Crisis, about 800 kilometers from the Apollo 11 astronauts in the Sea of Tranquility. Luna was launched July 13th, 3 days before the blast-off of Apollo 11, and has been orbiting the moon for 5 days. Hundreds of millions of people around the world, presidents, prime ministers, religious leaders, taxi drivers, housewives, and schoolchildren, are commenting on the Apollo landing on the moon. People around the globe followed the event and are still following it by television or radio in public meeting places, at work, or in their own homes. Accounts of the Apollo mission were heard in such widely scattered places as tea houses in Asia or around campfires in the Arctic. However, national broadcasters in Communist China, North Korea, and North Vietnam have not given their listeners an account of man's first landing on the moon. World reaction still pouring in is overwhelmingly one of awe, almost disbelief, and praise for the moon mission's achievement. Mixed in with this are some voices warning that space goals should not obscure the fight against injustice and poverty. Meantime, the safe arrival of the astronauts on the moon brought from Pope Paul the exclamation, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of good will." Patriarch Athenagoras of the Eastern Orthodox Church said perhaps the world is on the eve of a new understanding of God. Egypt reported that the city of Suez came under heavy Israeli artillery and rocket shelling today. A Reuters dispatch from Cairo says a group of newsmen heading for Suez were turned back today because of renewed exchanges of fire. An Israeli spokesman denied that Israeli batteries had fired on the city of Suez. He reported only sporadic shooting incidents across the Suez Canal. The United States will issue new regulations Wednesday, easing restrictions on travel to Communist China and trade with that country. A State Department spokesman said Americans abroad would be permitted to bring into the United States limited quantities of goods originating in Communist China for non-commercial purposes. And he said the new regulations will authorize validation of passports for travel to China for certain categories of people. These include congressmen, journalists, teachers, scholars, college students, physicians, scientists, and Red Cross representatives. The spokesman said the action is consistent with the desire of the Nixon administration to relax tensions and develop peaceful contacts between the American and Chinese people. In Saigon, a spokesman for Premier Tran Van Hoang denied earlier reports that the South Vietnamese cabinet had resigned. He said the premier met with his cabinet today and informed it that a reshuffle was imminent. But he said the premier made no decision when some minister suggested that the cabinet resign to make the reshuffle easier. The spokesman said the premier asked the cabinet members to continue their work. The new United States ambassador to West Germany, Kenneth Rush, arrived in Bonn today to take up his post. In an airport statement, Ambassador Rush noted that staunch partnership that has existed for almost a generation between the United States and the Federal Republic. He said it would be his chief aim to strengthen that cooperation. Ambassador Rush succeeds Henry Cabot Lodge, now chief United States delegate to the Paris talks on Vietnam. From Nairobi, Kenya, a Reuters news bulletin reports that Nairobi police have arrested a man on charges of murdering Tom Mboya, Kenya's economic and planning minister. Mr. Mboya was shot to death a little over 2 weeks ago while shopping in Nairobi. A complaint was filed against Senator Edward Kennedy in Edgartown, Massachusetts today, charging him with leaving the scene of an automobile accident. A young woman was killed and Senator Kennedy slightly injured early Saturday when the car he was driving ran off a bridge. The senator, who said he was in a state of shock after the accident, did not report it to police for several hours. The police chief who filed the complaint said a lawyer representing the senator had petitioned for a hearing to be held next Monday. Mrs. Robert Goddard, widow of the first man to experiment with liquid fuel rockets, watched the lunar walk of astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin at her home in Worcester, Massachusetts. Mrs. Goddard said her husband would have been so happy to watch the moon landing. He wouldn't have shouted or anything, she said. He would just have glowed. Dr. Goddard, whose basic concepts of rocketry made the Apollo missions possible, died in 1945, his dream of sending a rocket to the moon unfulfilled. International experts today opened a four-day meeting in Venice on ways to prevent the famous city of canals from sinking further into the sea. Since 1908, the foundations of the Italian city have sunk more than 13 centimeters. It is estimated that at the present rate, two-thirds of Venice will be underwater by 1990. The gathering of experts from the United States, Britain, France, and other countries was called together by the Italian government and the United Nations. That is the news. This is Paul Parks reporting on the Voice of America.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, man's first landing and first walk on the moon. About 23 minutes ago, we had the firing of the ascent engine. That came at about 17 hours 55 Greenwich Mean Time. So Apollo astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin have blasted off from the moon for rendezvous with the command ship Columbia and the trip back home. Firing of the ascent engine went very well, according to Apollo Mission Control. The lunar lander is now in an intermediate orbit. Those figures I'll get for you in just a moment. They are about 17.6 kilometers by 87 kilometers. The engines, that is the thruster engines, the small thrusters on the spacecraft, will be fired again in about an hour to achieve a still higher orbit for the actual rendezvous. That orbit about 82 by 79.5 kilometers, a near circular orbit. Docking will take place in about 3 hours. That would be about 5:11 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That would be 21 hours 11, I believe, Greenwich Mean Time. So there we are, one of the most critical phases in this flight over. Lunar module pilot Edwin Aldrin wrote his doctoral thesis on rendezvous operations in space, and at this moment he's carrying out some of this knowledge that he gained in his educational days and, of course, in the lengthy training that he and the other astronauts took part in for this flight. We will discuss in some detail just how this rendezvous technique is carried out. But first, let's listen to a brief interview with Buzz Aldrin, conducted before the flight by correspondent Rhett Turner on this rendezvous matter.
Buzz, your early research on orbital mechanics of rendezvous has certainly had an impact on the program. How have you felt its contribution from your position here at the Manned Spacecraft Center since you've been an astronaut, your doctor's dissertation?
Well, I think that many other people were thinking along these same lines, and it gave me the ability to, and equipped me in a way to be able to talk to these people and convey to them just how a pilot feels about performing some of these orbital mechanics maneuvers. In the process of this association, we've been able to refine many of the maneuver techniques to a point where I feel confident that even though there are many ways of carrying out rendezvous operations, I feel we have a very sound plan that is quite flexible and able to handle the many and various conditions that could be required in abort conditions and in normal conditions for rendezvous following an ascent from the lunar surface.
From what you know of the conditions of the moon, how low do you think a command module could safely go if it had to effect a rather risky rescue?
Oh, I think it could go to somewhere in the neighborhood of 50, 60,000 feet. I don't think that low an altitude is required for any recovery that I would anticipate.
Buzz, good luck throughout the flight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Lunar module pilot, Eagle pilot, Buzz Aldrin, describing the rendezvous technique that they're using right now. They're in there at that first orbit after liftoff from the moon of about 17.6 kilometers by 87 kilometers, or in nautical miles, about 9.5 by 47.3 nautical miles.
Bill, I'd like to add just a bit to that conversation with Buzz Aldrin. I think that one of the principal reasons Buzz was picked for this flight is because he's considered one of the brainiest, one of the smartest of all the astronauts, and his understanding and expertise in mathematics and physics, particularly on things concerned with orbital rendezvous. Throughout the space program and throughout the Manned Spacecraft Center, Buzz Aldrin is considered to be, quote, the man who wrote the book, end quote, on how to bring two orbiting spacecraft together at tremendous velocities, but to bring them together at relatively no velocity. In other words, right up together for rendezvous and docking.
Brett?
John.
John Hammersmith.
Yes. You might also mention that he is the man and the expert on extravehicular activity. It was his EVA during Gemini 12 that was the most successful, I would say, although perhaps not the most spectacular in the Gemini series. He had profited from all the experience of the previous flights and had gone about planning that flight in a very meticulous and deliberate fashion and carried out the EVA very, very successfully. And it was Buzz who was assigned the task of experimenting with mobility on the lunar surface and checking his balance and analyzing the effects of different ways of moving about.
And he spent a considerable amount of time last night bouncing around and trying to maneuver in all sorts of directions and conditions. It looked rather amusing.
It may have seemed somewhat odd to our listeners that while Neil was gathering rocks and things, Buzz was talking about how it felt and was hopping around and doing all sorts of things, and that was the reason. One of his primary tasks was to do just that.
If you were watching that somewhere there in the world and wondered why he seemed to bounce up and down, this would explain it considerably.
He was also experimenting.
Buzz is quite an advocate of physical conditioning. He is one of the foremost proponents of using the gymnasium and all sorts of physical exercises. And as John Hammersmith mentioned, he did more or less pull together all of the previous experiences in Gemini and give them a final evaluation with very expert, in expert manner, we might add.
I wonder
of how a pilot can operate inside that bulky spacesuit.
I wonder if this, at this point, we could review once again for our listeners this matter of the orbital mechanics, the changing of orbits, in other words, by this lunar spacecraft, Eagle, to bring it up for rendezvous and docking with the mother spacecraft. John Hammersmith, you'll remember that we got a very good workout in orbital mechanics during the Gemini program, and had quite a bit of practice in that, and of course later in the Apollo shots.
It was in Gemini, Bill, that the rendezvous techniques and methods were perfected for this mission. As a matter of fact, there were some basic and fundamental things done at first, we did deliberately do some simulations of orbits about the moon. We were in Earth orbit in Gemini exclusively, but there were some geometrical scaling laws which applied, which enabled us to do quite extensive simulation of lunar orbit rendezvous.
Well, Bill Land, can we go through this orbiting procedure here? We are in the low orbit of about 17 by 87 kilometers, and less than an hour now, we will be coming up for what we call CSI, concentric sequence initiation. Now, that sounds very complicated, I'm certain. It does to me and to our listeners. Actually, it's just another orbital change, isn't it? Raising the orbit?
That's right. It raises the orbit and circularizes it such that it then catches up and remains at a constant altitude, or relatively a constant altitude, below the command and service modules. I might start out by saying that the initial and most critical maneuver in the rendezvous has been performed, and that was the ascent from the surface. That's the one that put them in this egg-shaped orbit, which comes at a low point of about 9 nautical miles from the surface, and then up close to the CSM's orbit about 15 miles below it. Now, that started out on the near side of the moon where the lunar module was landed, and so the low point of the orbit right now is on this side of the moon.
Right in front of us, even.
That's right.
We'll be now, they will be going behind the moon, though, in about 20 minutes or so.
Well, that's right, Bill.
I'll give you an exact time on that. 12 minutes for the command module and 13 for the lunar module.
They're very close, then.
Yeah.
Right. Now, once they get behind the moon, just opposite the point where they inserted themselves into orbit on this side, they will then do this second maneuver, this concentric sequence initiate, which puts them into a near circular orbit. That is, what it does is, by adding energy then to the orbit, it will increase the paracynthian, or the low point, which is on this side, and raise it to approximately what the apocynthian, or high point, is on the other side. So we'll be in a near circular orbit. Now, if that orbit isn't quite circular, and it shouldn't really be perfectly circular at that point, then when they come back around this side again, another 180 degrees or half a circumference around the moon, they will do another fine adjustment, which is called constant delta height adjustment. That will then put them in an orbit which is very near circular and remains at a constant difference in altitude between themselves and the command and service module.
Now, where will Eagle be? They will be below and ahead, or behind?
Eagle, or the lunar module, will be below and behind the command and service module. And they will be continually catching up. You see that one of the basic features of the rendezvous maneuver is that by putting the active craft, the one that's doing the maneuvering, into a lower orbit than that of the passive craft, or the command and service module in this case, by putting the lunar module into a lower orbit, it catches up. It's going around the moon faster. It doesn't have as far to travel because the circumference of its travel is shorter. Consequently, it will continue to catch up with the command and service module until it's in a position close by and underneath where it will do the final maneuver, and that will occur roughly 30 minutes after the constant delta height maneuver and still within sight of the Earth. That maneuver then will start the closing on, direct closing on the command and service module, which will be accomplished about half a revolution later, and then docking will occur.
Before that, we call that TPI, the terminal phase.
That's
initiation.
Right, terminal phase initiate.
And there is a firing, isn't there, of thrusters, or very small firing, I suppose.
That's right. All these maneuvers that we've been discussing since the ascent, which was done with the ascent propulsion system on the ascent stage of the lunar module, every maneuver we've talked about since that will be done with the what we call a reaction control system, which is nominally used for attitude control. However, it does have considerable propulsive force, and to do these small maneuvers, it's very sufficient.
And we're not using the larger ascent engine that was used to lift Eagle off the surface of the moon, then.
No, it has done a superb job, and
indeed,
we'd like to let it rest on its laurels right here.
We're back to that racetrack in a way, aren't we, Bill?
I think we are.
The very vivid description that I think that I can put in my mind, and I think many of our listeners can put into their minds, is to picture two craft trying to get in the same track going around a racetrack. The one that's on just the inside rail catches up or goes just a little bit faster, and then eventually they can pull together.
That's
an oversimplification, of course.
But a very good one.
Very good. John Hammersmith, let me ask this question. Why do we have this about an hour delay between each of the major firings here, or changing of orbits, really coasting for about an hour? Is this so that the firing will occur on the side of the moon facing the Earth?
No, Bill. In all of these maneuvers, we try to cooperate with Mother Nature so that we don't have to use up any more fuel than necessary. This particular the scheme we're using here works out to be very close to a minimum energy expenditure, and we can do anything we want to if we carry enough propellant on board, but we don't have that kind of luxury, and so we, as I say, we cooperate with Mother Nature and with the mechanics of the situation so that we use as little fuel as possible.
The transmissions from the spacecraft are quite clear at this moment. We just heard Columbia call in Mike Collins, who has a very sharp and clear voice, call in and confirm what he called the wide dot, some reference that he had to coordinate with the lunar module. And then there was one brief word from Buzz Aldrin. Again, when the lunar module transmits, you can hear a whirring sound in the background, sound of fans on board the spacecraft.
It's been about 38 minutes. 38 minutes since
that's
the
Mike
firing
Collins
of the ascent engine.
Columbia calling Eagle. Let's see if we hear Eagle respond. They still have 6 minutes.
8 degrees, very closely in pointing direction.
That's Buzz Aldrin saying the AGS agrees very closely in pointing direction. They're getting themselves aligned toward each other.
Columbia is unable to read Eagle on either antenna or on VHF duplex Bravo. You got yourself a suggestion?
Roger. Columbia, we understand you are unable to read Eagle. Stand by.
Columbia is trying to communicate with Eagle. He is not reading him directly. They are attempting to align themselves.
Houston, tell Columbia that we read him about strength 2.
That's Neil saying we read Columbia about 6-2, meaning very strong with some noise. We're reading Mike here on Earth about 6-2, very strong and clear, but with some noise.
We're coming up 125 hours and 2 minutes into the mission of Apollo 11.
The command module should go out of contact with the Earth in 5 minutes, the lunar module in 6.5 minutes, just a bit over that. We're now getting...
Okay, right there, Bando.
That was Aldrin mentioning...
Yes, Columbia, also my VHF ranging is not working now, and I'd like to know whether you'd like me to continue making sextant marks or do nothing. I'm supposed to be doing VHF marks only for the next 6 or 7 minutes.
He's VHF ranging is not
Columbia,
working.
Columbia, Houston, Roger, we copy. And Eagle looks like the best antenna with the forward for the lamp. Handbrake, Eagle, we missed your loading of the TPI TIG and P-32. Could you confirm you've done that?
The Earth relaying messages to each craft. Mike Collins having trouble with his VHF ranging and attempting to get direct communication between his spacecraft, Columbia, the command module, and LEM, Eagle. Each of the spacecraft can talk very clearly with mission control.
Columbia, Houston, recommend you take sextant marks and do not reinitialize. Over.
That instruction to Mike to take sextant marks. For determination.
Roger, Houston, Columbia's got the VHF ranging back now. I'll stick with the nominal, thank you.
Roger, mighty fine.
He got his VHF ranging back. It's coming in again. This has to do with alignment of antennas between the two spacecraft. Sometimes one of the craft may have been rotated slightly in a direction which would compromise the signal strength.
Clear now, Eagle.
Mike is reading Eagle now. Columbia reading Eagle loud and clear. Now, they may be communicating without us hearing them back here on Earth as they're orbiting the moon in this first portion of the extensive rendezvous maneuver. The rendezvous will take about 3 hours and 10 minutes in that neighborhood from liftoff from the surface of the moon. In 3 minutes from right now, the command module should lose its signal with the Earth, and in 4.5 minutes, the lunar module should go around behind the moon, and we will lose contact with it for about 45 to 47 minutes. The two spacecraft apparently are now in clear communication. They may transmit to each other without transmitting directly to the Earth, so we may not be monitoring any of that conversation here. I thought I heard something from Eagle then. I thought I heard one of the astronauts inside key his transmitter and that whirring
Columbia, Houston.
Call to Mike Collins.
Go ahead, Houston.
Roger, Mike, you can go ahead and get as many VHF and sextant marks as you can here in this period of time.
Again, Mike's busy. One man in a three-man spacecraft trying to run his VHF radio ranging device and also take sextant marks. That's Mike Collins in Columbia. He is passive as far as controlling the spacecraft is concerned. It's in an orbit that is in what is called a free fall as it's falling around the moon in orbit. And he's just looking out and trying to track himself and the lunar module, which is coming below him. He is ahead and above at the moment. 1 minute to LOS on Columbia.
We have about 51.5 for CSI, and we tend to confirm your Y dot. And break for Eagle. Verify VHF Bravo transmitter is off.
There was an instruction from the Earth to verify.
Roger, VHF Bravo is off.
That's the B VHF transmitter is off, the second, an A and a B.
Eagle, Houston, recommend AF Omni, and are you go for CSI so we can let Columbia know. Over. Roger, we're go for CSI.
Eagle is go for CSI.
Columbia, Houston, did you copy? Eagle is go for CSI.
Okay, 15 seconds from now until we lose the command module. Mike is talking right up to the last moment. That signal is getting very erratic now from the command module. We'll get confirmation of loss of signal any moment now, any second. A very noisy signal. I presume that by now we've lost lock on the command module on Columbia as he goes around behind the moon. The CSI maneuver will be carried out on the backside of the moon as we look at it from Earth about midway through this.
This is Apollo Control. Columbia has gone behind the moon. Still a little over a minute left until Eagle goes behind the moon. We'll catch these last few minutes of tracking and any possible conversation.
The likelihood of any communication from Eagle is fairly low at this point, about 50 seconds until it disappears around behind the moon and we lose lock and voice communication. At 51 minutes past the hour, about 10 minutes from now.
We'll see you coming around the other side. Your AOS times are 1 minute ahead of the flight class.
That word from Houston.
Thank you.
We heard Neil Armstrong say, thank you. 25 seconds into loss of signal on the lunar module. About 10 minutes until they're scheduled to perform that very short thrust with the reaction control system thrusters on board the Eagle spacecraft. They will burn them to impart a delta velocity of about 49 feet per second just to circularize their orbit below and behind the lunar module. There went the signal.
This is Apollo Control. We have had loss of signal with Eagle. Quite scratchy as Eagle went over the hill to complete the 25th lunar revolution as it gets to the midpoint on the lunar far side. Ascent burn just completed, went quite well on time at 124 hours, 22 minutes, 0 seconds ground elapsed time. Coming up on this rev, approximately 10 minutes from now, as a matter of fact, will be the concentric sequence initiate maneuver, CSI, which will raise the Eagle's perilune to some 45 nautical miles. Eagle now is in a orbit measuring 9.4 nautical miles at insertion or perilune and 46.7 at apolune. This CSI maneuver will be made approximately at apolune, therefore the effect takes place 180 degrees later and has the effect of raising perilune to the desired 45 nautical miles. This maneuver will take place at 125 hours, 19 minutes, 34.7 seconds. It will have a delta V or velocity change of 51.5 feet per second. All of these maneuvers, incidentally, in the rendezvous sequence by Eagle will be made by the using the reaction control system of Eagle. Following the CSI at 126 hours, 18 minutes, 0 seconds, and 9.2 foot per second burn, probably mostly a radial burn, at 126 hours, 18 minutes, will twist the Eagle's orbit to an equal distance from the orbit of Columbia, what they call a constant delta height, or CDH maneuver. At 126 hours, 57 minutes, 00 seconds, terminal phase initiate, TPI. In this maneuver, the crew visually thrust along the line of sight toward Columbia. When the line of sight is some 27 degrees above the local horizontal, this maneuver will have a magnitude of about 24.9 feet per second. And in turn, it raises the apolune to 60.5 nautical miles, which is approximately the altitude Columbia is orbiting. Terminal phase finalization, TPF, 127 hours, 39 minutes, 39.2 seconds. This is the start time for a series of small burns, which combination of mid-course corrections and velocity match maneuvers to bring Eagle in with Columbia and match the velocity so that they station keep for a short period for photography, etc., and move on into docking at approximately 128 hours ground elapsed time. In all of these maneuvers, Mike Collins aboard Columbia is spring-loaded to do what is called a mirror image maneuver. Approximately a minute after the Eagle is scheduled to make its maneuver. And if for some reason Eagle cannot make the maneuver, Collins would do the exact same maneuver all in reverse so that Columbia would in effect begin a CSM active rendezvous with Eagle. As Eagle went over the hill on the 25th revolution, the velocity was being measured at 5,410 feet per second. Eagle's weight, somewhat lighter than when it started out, in excess of 32,000 pounds, it's now shrunk to some 5,885 pounds. Some 39 minutes, 20 seconds away from acquisition of Columbia. 41 minutes, 45 seconds from acquisition of Eagle as the two vehicles come around on the 26th lunar revolution. The crew will likely describe how the CSI burn went, which is some 5 minutes away from this point. And at 125 hours, 14 minutes, ground elapsed time, this is Apollo Control.
That was Terry White in Mission Control, Apollo Control, with a very, very clear wrap-up of all the events happening right now and expected to occur within the next 2 to 3 hours as we effect that final rendezvous and docking. 125 hours, 14 minutes, 59 seconds, says the countdown clock. And docking should come at just about 128 hours even, or 2 hours and 45 minutes from now. Several maneuvers, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four principal maneuvers, the fifth being a series of maneuvers for a terminal phase finalization, until the two spacecraft are together in the same orbit and their relative velocities are zero, meaning they're right along side by side.
Well, we're now 125 hours and 15 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11. Both spacecraft, Columbia and Eagle, now behind the moon. Columbia with Mike Collins guiding it, and Eagle, the lunar module, with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin aboard. We're now about 53 minutes away from the launch, the very successful ascent burn of the engine, the launch off the surface of the moon. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin spent a total of 21 hours, 36 minutes, and 22 seconds on the surface of the moon. Well, let's talk for a few moments, Norm Guerin, if we may, with our two colleagues, Bill Land and John Hammersmith.
I was going to ask Bill Land. Eagle has reduced its weight considerably since it started its power descent yesterday, right, Bill?
That's right, Norm. It started out yesterday as it separated from the command and service module at a weight of approximately 33,000 pounds. And in its descent to the lunar surface, it burned away approximately 18,000 pounds of fuel. So that left it about 15,000 pounds on the lunar surface. Then this morning, as it left the lunar surface, it separated from roughly 5,000 pounds of that mass, which was left on the surface. That's the descent stage. The ascent stage at liftoff weighed approximately 10,000 pounds and burned away 5,000, roughly 5,000 pounds, getting itself into the initial orbit that it is in right now. So we have a craft up there that weighs about 4,800 pounds right now.
With such a drastic drop in weight, does it have anything to do with attitude control?
Well, the crew reported some oscillations, and that wasn't surprising at all because it uses a standard set, one set of reaction control engines that it uses both when it's fully loaded with the descent stage as well as it does when it's empty with just the ascent stage. And with that tremendous difference in mass, those engines, the thrust of those engines can be felt much more. Consequently, a small burst on the thrusters will cause an attitude excursion, and it takes a little more control to maintain it at a constant or near constant attitude while it's maneuvering during the powered flight. As it gets lighter, this becomes more and more noticeable. And as a matter of fact, it's not only constantly controlling its attitude to maintain an attitude, but it's changing all the time because it started off in a vertical condition and then it had to pitch over gradually until finally it was horizontal to the lunar surface.
Well, what is the attitude of the lunar module Eagle at the present time, now that it is in orbit?
Well, as a matter of fact, Bill, right now it's about 4 minutes away from its concentric sequence initiation, and that will be a posigrade maneuver, which is in the direction of flight. So its attitude would be horizontal with respect to the lunar surface on the back side of the moon and pointed toward the direction it's orbiting the moon.
Trailing by less than 300 kilometers.
I'd like to go back to that time on the moon, if I may, those 21 hours and 36 minutes, and ask this question. When they first landed on the moon, you may recall, they gave the map coordinates of a lunar map of about 0.799 degrees north, in other words, about 1 degree north, and about 23.46 degrees east. But so far, we've never had exact confirmation of the location of the lunar lander, Eagle, on that spot on the moon. Why is this, with all of the electronic gear that we have? And
Bill, in order to determine the accuracy, this is really something that was dependent upon the crew's observation when the crew settled down into the landing site. We really didn't expect that they would have to maneuver as much as they did. Of course, we built in the capability to do that, but we found that they were landing in a crater area, and the result of that was that he had to conduct a maneuver to avoid it. He was long at that point due to the burn that was conducted. It burned evidently just a little bit less hot than was anticipated. Consequently, he landed a little bit long and then avoided that crater, and the combination of those things put him outside of the ellipse in terrain that he didn't recognize. Once he was on the surface, he had little opportunity then to really know where he was, because then the features became much different than they were on the map that was made up from photographs taken at altitude. So as a result of all this, plus the fact that the errors in the manned spaceflight network instrumentation are such that we couldn't get them more accurate than maybe a kilometer at the lunar surface. Now, this is a great error as far as geologists are concerned, and they were very concerned about getting precise locations so they know where that seismometer is, so they know where the purple rock is, so they know where everything that was either left on the surface or picked up from the surface is. However, it wasn't a problem with navigation as far as returning to the command and service module, because the rendezvous radar is perfectly capable of doing that job. The concern is with the geologists, and their concern will be diminished considerably when the crew returns with photographic evidence of where they landed. There was a sequence camera that took motion pictures of the surface as they were landing, and these then will be matched up with lunar orbiter photographs, and they will be able to determine precisely where the landing was after the fact.
I think we should point out, gentlemen, that concentric sequence initiation burn should be completed by this time there on the backside of the moon. Of course, the astronauts are out of touch with us here for quite a period of time, but just about 2 minutes ago was the time schedule for that 51.5 foot per second burn.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say this would put them in an orbit of about 82 by 79.5 kilometers, a near-circular orbit. John Hammersmith?
I was going to mention that even though we're talking about places on the moon, that the mapping process on the moon is really no different than it is here on the Earth. It depends upon having good solid landmarks or anchor points to lay out your map coordinates, and we just don't have the familiarity with the lunar terrain to that level of detail just yet. Although the as Bill Land noted, the combination of the detailed photographs that we will get back from this mission, put together with the somewhat more coarse pictures that we got back from the lunar orbiter, should enable us to really to pinpoint the location of this thing. It wasn't of great concern as far as the navigation is concerned, and they had a lot of other things to do, so we just haven't been paying that kind of attention to it.
Would the laser ranging device aid in pinpointing the location by triangulation in some future time?
Norm, that happened to be my first thought, too, that maybe we could do something like that. But actually, the laser reflector is designed to measure distance, and its accuracy in azimuth is no better than the accuracy of the manned spaceflight network antennae. So we won't get any better location there, because it does require an azimuth location as far as doing it from Earth is concerned.
Let me ask this question. You remember during the flight of Apollo 10, when they fired the ascent engine for the first time in space at the 50,000-foot mark, we got these very strange gyrations, and the spacecraft commander had to take manual control immediately. Apparently, there was no problem whatsoever today when they fired that engine. Had they taken special care to really to avoid this? I don't believe they really found out what caused that, did they?
Bill, it's not something that you can say for certain. It's something that you can say, however, through analysis, was most probable. The crew was extremely busy during that period of time at the 50,000-foot level when they were changing attitude and preparing for a burn, and in fact at that time preparing for the staging, which required a minor burn of the RCS thrusters, and they had to get themselves into a proper attitude for it, and they were doing some checking in the cabin of some minor oscillations that they had previously, and in so checking they were throwing a few switches to see what might be causing a little problem. It seems probable from all the evidence that we have and from talking with the crew and going over this thing many, many times from the circuit standpoint, the engineering standpoint, seems most probable, and the crew agrees that they probably brushed or opened that switch, that attitude control switch, which caused the problem. But they promptly then returned the switch to the proper position, so they didn't get into any trouble.
My colleague Norm Guerin was on here overnight, that is overnight Washington time. Norm, do you happen to know what time the astronauts finally got to bed? I understand they didn't sleep too well.
No, the first report, Bill, from Mission Control was something to the effect that they were dozing, that they had tried to go to sleep. You recall, John? I think you were with us at that
yes,
time.
Yes, I don't recall the time. It was really getting
like
into
four,
the... It was something like 4 or 5 a.m. is what I recall.
About 4:15 a.m.
Before they got to sleep?
Before they said goodnight.
Oh, boy. Then they were up again at about 9 a.m. Houston time, some 5 to 6 hours later.
They had the way it settled out, Red, it looked like instead of their getting 8 or 8.5 hours of sleep, they were going to be lucky to get 6.5.
They did report...
The only report I heard at all this morning... was on Mike Collins. He's, of course, up in Columbia and has a little better sleeping quarters there, a sleeping bag, as a matter of fact, down on a cot-like device underneath one of the couches. And he reported 5 hours. And I would seriously doubt that either Aldrin or Armstrong got that much. Does that, if you say they got to bed about 4 or 5 a.m. Washington time, and I know they were up at about 10:20 Washington time,
I think that's right, Rhett. They reported Collins being sound asleep long before the astronauts and the Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Collins, I would have remained in his couch, Rhett, since he was the only one in the spacecraft.
Not much happening here now. Of course, the astronauts are all behind the moon, out of touch with us here on Earth. 25 minutes until acquisition of the command module, 28 minutes until acquisition of the lunar module. At the time of this CSI maneuver, the Eagle should have been about 267 kilometers distant, below and behind the command module, and some 83 kilometers above the surface of the moon.